Hello and welcome to Unmuted Unmastered. I'm Will and this is the internet's most expiring music podcast. On the show this week I'm joined by James.
Hello.
In this episode we're going to be reviewing the new album from MGMT. We've got the upcoming releases you need to know about, but first the news. James, what have you got for us this week?
Well, this week I wanted to do a more positive one because I feel like we've had negative ones in recent weeks and I feel like I talk about negative articles all the time anyway. So I've gone into the depths of the internet, dug up some positive stories, and this is what I could find. So leading women executives and The Circle have united to combat gender-based violence and poverty worldwide. So if you don't know, The Circle are an NGO who fight for gender equality, fight against gender inequality.
They're fighting for gender inequality.
They fight for equality of gender. Well, that's another way of saying it, across the world. And specifically to do with inequality females. Leaders in the UK music industry came together with The Circle in the House of Cocoa in London to show solidarity for victims of violence and acute poverty related to The Circle's missions. Basically, what this means is that a lot of people came together and gave money to The Circle. Who are these people, you ask? Sammy Andrews from DV8 Digital, Kim Chappell from Chappell Productions, Cassandra Gracie from Sony Music, Sarah Henderson from MCPR, Anastasia Mann from Universal Music, and Tara Patterson from 19 Entertainment. And I mentioned all of those names, but the article I was reading off, oh, by the way, is from musicweek.com. They mentioned that Sony Music, Universal Music, Universal Music Publishing Group, SGM, SJM Concerts, and Warner Music Group donated. So I don't know about the other ones, but at least those donated to The Circle's new empowerment fund, which will provide urgent, flexible funding to grassroots women-led projects around the world, which seems like a good thing. I haven't read into The Circle's mission and what they do too much, I'll be honest. Hopefully there's no dodgy stuff going in the background, but they seem all right. I found it kind of interesting that these big names are coming together, which they may not normally come together to do things, but they're coming together to do something good. Raki Shah, I'm not sure how I pronounce their name, but that's how I'm going to pronounce it. The CEO of The Circle added, "The Circle has a long history of partnering with the music industry over the years, from our music icons auction with Billie Eilish and Taylor Swift, to our global feminism film with Ed Sheeran, Mary J. Blige, and others. We are delighted that the industry is coming together to raise vital funds for the marginalized women around the world through the inaugural Women in Music launch." And obviously this comes just before International Women's Day on the 8th of March. A load of big names coming together to do hopefully a good thing, give money, even if they're doing it for, the view of the people, for publicity, giving money, but it's still money that's being given to a good cause. So, good news this week.
Yeah, broadly sounds positive. There's not really much more to say on it, really. Yeah. You mentioned Ed Sheeran in there about the global feminism film. Did you see he's launched his own range of loop pedals today?
No.
So these, as we're recording, this will be last week as it comes out. He's announced two products. There's the Sheeran Looper and the Sheeran Looper X, They're being made by Headrush, who do like the multi-FX kind of amp sim floor units.
Okay.
The base one is £300 for a loop pedal, that is. The X version is £1,200.
Huh.
I think the justification of the price is it says it has like built-in effects and stuff, so I think it's kind of also a kind of multi-FX unit. But it's enormous as well. Like the size of a pedal board enormous.
Hmm.
Weird.
I wonder if it would be better just get a separate loop pedal and get your own pedals, FX pedals put on top of that rather than getting the whole unit. Which costs an arm and a leg. I mean, there are, like, the Ditto Looper is one of the more affordable ones you could probably get instead. I don't know who this is aimed for, really. Like,
I think the more expensive ones for, like, I don't listen to many of them, so I kind of forget they exist, but you know there are the artists who, like, are big on the loop pedal live. Yeah. And do a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think this does like multi-track recording, and you can probably like do individual mutes of different loops, and it's probably a bit more kind of advanced in terms of what you can do than a basic looper, but I don't know.
It's a looper at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Anyway, that's a slight detour from the
good segue though. I like that.
About women's stuff to Ed Sheeran. Let's get on to our review for this week. We're looking at Loss of Life by MGMT. It's the band's fifth studio album, released on the 23rd of February 2024 on Mom and Pop Records. It's their debut for the label and their first not on Columbia, I think. So it's their shift from a major to an indie label. The album's 10 tracks long and 45 minutes and 9 seconds. James, what did you think of the record?
I really enjoyed this one. Like, MGMT have such a range, and I think they've kind of shown this in this one. Great sound, great feel, great emotion, and yeah, great writing. It's one of those albums where I felt like I've known these songs for a long time. Like, when the song comes up for, like, a second time listening to it, like, I feel like I know this well. Even after a few listens. I think the second half might have intrigued me a bit more than the first half, but yeah, this album kind of confused me a bit. Like, first time I listened to it, I was like, this is really good. Second time, I'm like, not as much. And the third time, I'm like, oh, it's good again. So I'm still, like, not on the fence. I know I like it, but it's just like certain songs I like more than others on different listens. But I'm mad about that. It's just a really intriguing album. I think lyrically, the album has a lot to offer. I feel like I needed like another month to dive into the lyrics. Maybe I'm thinking about them too much, but I feel like there is a lot in there that I just don't get right now. I haven't unpacked enough yet. I think there's more acoustic stuff than maybe I expected, but it was good. I enjoyed those more personal songs, but I also enjoyed it when it got a bit louder, a bit more dynamic, with those synths and those horns and more of the mad stuff. And the harmonies were great. The vocals were good, but when those harmonies came in, yeah, it just added more of those layers and more motion and yeah, more fun. And the guitars were great, and the rest of the instrumentation came together really well. Yeah, maybe I expected more wild electronic stuff. Maybe I wanted more of that, but maybe I'm asking for too much. There was just a lot of acoustic guitar, more than I expected. I also feel like, because the first track is Loss of Life Part 2, and the last track is Loss of Life. Well, not part one, but Loss of Life. It does feel like there's a special way of listening to this, like a secret way. I just feel like that's...
It's the damn situation all over again. Oh, you've got to listen to it in reverse album order. Then you get the real message.
I feel like that's kind of like an MGMT thing to do. I may be wrong, but yeah, I've seen some of the tracks on this. They're like, they sent to only certain fans, and I don't know. Overall, I really enjoyed the album. It's just a great, fun listen.
Yeah, I'd agree. I really enjoyed this one as well. I kind of had a similar journey to, not where I kind of disliked it, but I think throughout the album, I think every song is good in its own right, but I think it's kind of packed with a lot of quite slow songs, and it makes the album, despite not being all that long in runtime, feel quite long at times. And I don't know if that's something that's going to dissipate the more I've listened to it, or become even more apparent when I've heard it more than just the few times I've listened to it this week. But I really liked the blend of, like, it's like 70s folk rock kind of singer-songwritery sounds, which is where I think a lot of the acoustic guitar kind of sounds come from. But then they're also doing a lot of kind of power ballads, essentially, with 80s production. And, like, I mean, we'll get into it, but there's like a straight up duet on this record and stuff. Like, it goes in a few other directions as well. And I just liked that blend in it. Coming off of Little Dark Age, which I saw somewhere saying it's 6 years old now, which just feels wrong, because I'm like, oh, that's a relatively recent album, right? apparently not. But it just feels like, I mean, such a left turn and something different. And I feel like that for me is just in and of itself quite exciting, because, you know, they definitely had, with Little Dark Age, kind of a critical reevaluation, I think. And the people who'd been championing Congratulations as a great album kind of came back out of the woodwork and saying, oh, this band, like, people had kind of written them off after Oracular Spectacular and the subsequent albums not doing so well. I think they kind of became a bigger force in terms of their whole discography and better regarded. So I think they could have just kind of stayed on that path and gone on to do bigger things in the synth pop space, but I really like that they did something different. And yeah, you kind of touched on it, but I like how honest and, like, deeply emotional it is a lot of the time. And it, whereas Little Dark Age definitely has those moments where there is that kind of emotion. A lot of the time it's being snarky and funny and silly. Whereas this one, it seemed a lot more kind of, they definitely have those lines in the lyrics where they're being, they're doing stuff for comedy, but the general tone is one of kind of very serious melancholy a lot of the time. I just enjoyed that, because it, particularly with the kinds of songs they're trying to do, I think if you try and do a power ballad and you don't take yourself seriously in, like, the right way, it's just not gonna play, is it? So yeah, I think that was a good choice. So yeah, overall, I've got a lot of thoughts on this album, because I think there's just so much here, and I don't know quite how I'm gonna feel about it in the long run yet, because I'm still kind of sussing it out, because it doesn't feel like it fits neatly into any kind of box I can assign to it. But yeah, I've been really enjoying it this week.
Yeah, you mentioned the maturity there, and I think that's a kind of the big part of this album. I think Freddie's song is, I think that's how you say her name, but Freddie's song is a good song to point out here, because this is a song for Andrew Van Wingarden's daughter, who's 2 years old when he writes this. So yeah, not to, like, really comment on this song at all, but this song kind of shows what mindset he's in for the album, and I think the rest of the songs really show that, really, what kind of mindset he's in. Obviously, he's talking about a lot of negative stuff and what his mind's going through, but he also talks about more positive things and how he's getting through this life. And I think having a daughter is probably what's helping him release that in this music.
Yeah, and you can see that on tracks like Nothing Changes, where like the whole first 4 minutes is this slow power ballad where he's basically singing about being kind of stuck in this loop and things are just going like sound like they're going terribly. But then all of a sudden at like the 4 minute mark, it suddenly switches and there are horns and it's kind of jazzy and it, you know, it just feels like, okay, well, clearly something's going better for this person in the story based on just sonically what's going on here. And I think that kind of speaks to a lot of the album where there's a lot of pessimism in the lyrics, but I think they are kind of presenting also the silver linings kind of at the end of it. And a lot of the time saying, well, the world kind of sucks, but there are good things to find and meaning to be found in what we're doing.
Yeah. I'm glad you picked out Nothing Changes there, because I mean, I just thought about the duplicity of like the name Nothing Changes and halfway through it's just like, it changes. But that song really reminded me of like, you're walking into a different room in like a JPRG or something, like a game. You walk into a different room and suddenly the music changes. It's that sudden. But it does work because, yeah, that theme, like you said, changes as well. And yeah, I can't tell you why exactly I like it, but I just really like it.
Yeah, I think that the other big unusual shift in the album is on the final track, Loss of Life, where at the end there's just like this IDM square pusher type beat that comes in, which shouldn't really fit with all of the 70s and 80s kind of, and I guess 90s in some places sounds across the rest of the record, but it does kind of work at the end of that song. And again, it's just a kind of last minute in the song switch up into something very different.
Yeah, that chiptune 16-bit, whatever you want to call it, sound was, it's just something that didn't get old for me. Like in Loss of Life and Loss of Life Part 2, both of them had that sound and it was just so fun. Yeah, it didn't get old. But yeah, that last track had these beautiful harmonies as well. And the delayed kind of reverb piano gave like this pseudo futuristic sound, kind of like that futuristic sound that, no, like back in the day, that's what they thought the future would sound like, if that makes sense. But the song still feels, even like these bursts of fun, it still feels very poignant, but I still haven't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I really like the poem that's read out in Loss of Life Part 2 at the beginning as well. I mean, I wrote down the lyric, "Why the cow parsnip is hollow," which I did have to Google, what is a cow parsnip? But yeah, apparently that poem's from like a Middle Ages, like Welsh poem that's just being read. But I just feel like it fits quite nicely with a lot of the themes on this album of kind of maybe taking a step back and observing a bit more. And obviously it leads well into the first track, Mother Nature, because it's talking about a lot of kind of natural things and understanding. But also it has this slightly odd texture to the words that are being said, where I think if these were lyrics kind of written now, you might not get lines like why ale is bitter and why brine is salt. Those just sounded very kind of old to me in a good way. Like they just felt like they had texture in a way that maybe, like, if it was written today, I'm not sure you'd maybe think about using ale. You might think of, like, I don't know, focus more on the natural stuff or maybe something even more modern. But that just feels like a kind of, I don't know, this kind of old but still human thing. I don't know if I'm putting that at all clearly, but
oh, yeah, I know, like, that's nice. I can feel exactly what you mean, but yeah, I can't really put it into words. It's just like, it sounds old, but it sounds still sounds very genuine. It's coming from a person. And yeah, I had to look up where it came from as well. but I feel like it could still have been written by them. Like,
they've done enough weird stuff over the years.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the poem. I really enjoyed just like you said, it's about observing the world and kind of unpacking it a bit. And that's kind of what the album does a bit. Observing the narrator's life and unpacking it. I like how when the poetry or the song gets later, or as it unfolds, you go into these darker themes, and I think the music definitely reflects that as well. And it's just a nice exposition to the album as a whole.
Yeah, it leads in really nicely to Mother Nature, which I think is probably still one of my favourite songs on the record after having listened to it a reasonable amount as a single. Just because I think the chorus is really catchy, and it just kind of lives in that kind of 70s folk rock type feel. I like how they kind of go back to that and go maybe even folkier on Nothing to Declare later on the album. So it doesn't feel quite so much like a one-off, because they do jump around quite a bit, where certain songs on here very much feel in the power ballad space. And I think those two feel more in the kind of more on the folk side. And I think if you just had the one, it'd particularly if it was Mother Nature, it'd feel like, oh, there's this kind of one great folky song, but I kind of wanted more. So I'm glad they went back to it. And on that track, I really like at the end of the vocal lines, there's like the little bluesy guitar licks that play. And it's kind of a pretty typical thing to do on, I guess, that kind of song. But I just think the way that it's played and the tone of the guitar works really well on it.
Yeah, for me, I got a lot of like Britpop. I got a lot of Britpop vibes as well. I just thought it was a great song, really. Like, I was trying to unpack the lyrics. Like, at first I thought maybe it's something to do with being a parent, which would kind of make sense for the album. But also, it feels like a song about being a parent to his music and how it is writing these songs all the time. And you mentioned Nothing to Declare as well. I really enjoyed that one. It starts out like this acoustic Beatles song, really. It kind of does kind of what you expect. Like, the vocals do what you expect a lot of the time, but then the tune changes a bit, and I really enjoyed that. And it kind of adds this psychedelic vibe that a lot of the other songs previously do as well. But this is a bit of a different context to it, which I really enjoyed.
One other track I really want to mention is Bubblegum Dog.
Yes.
Which is just like a glam rock track in the middle of this album, like it's like classic Bowie or something. It sounds great. It's really catchy. Feels very different. And I feel like you really need that after Dancing in Babylon, which is really enjoyable. And I actually think Christina the Queen's feature is great. And it doesn't at all feel like it stands out, but only in good ways. It doesn't feel like it breaks from the cohesiveness of the rest of the album. But then People in the Streets, I think, is a good song, but it's just awkwardly placed, where it just makes it feels like another slow power ballad. And that's probably maybe the worst point for me of feeling like, okay, I want things to speed up now because I'm getting a bit tired of it. And then Bubblegum Dog does kind of take you there, but I think maybe switching the running order around might help that, or maybe it just needed another song in between some of those to break it up a bit.
Yeah, like Dancing in Babylon for me, like I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't my favorite. But I think that's more of like a preference thing. I think they've done that style really well, but yeah, I thought it got better when we have that finger picked guitar in it, and it comes in with that like heavier kick drum. That was the best part for me. But like when I feel like People in the Streets was okay being there, but again, it wasn't my favorite. It was it was still good. It had this nice, tasteful, reverb-y slide guitar here and there. And this is one where I feel like the lyrics were saying more than I just read on the surface, really. But I haven't delved deep enough for that. But yeah, I feel like you can feel the pain in those vocals, which why I feel like there's more to be read, really. And then Bubblegum Dog. Yeah, I think that's kind of topping it for me on those three tracks. I really enjoyed Bubblegum Dog, and that might be my favorite in the album, or one of my favorites in the album. There's this instrument in it. I don't know what it is. I think it's an instrument. I don't think it's a synth. I think it's an instrument that they're doing weird effects to. But it sounds like a howling dog, which kind of fits the Bubblegum Dog. I don't think Bubblegum Dog is actually talking about a dog. It's talking about something. But yeah, that howling dog sound was really clever and really interesting. I love those fuzzy sounds that were in the song, alongside that clean piano. And then that guitar solo sounded Jack White-ish. And there's just a lot of weirdness and a lot of effects, a lot of sounds. And it doesn't become overwhelming, but yeah, there's just a lot to eat up, really. But it still has this negative undertone, which, yeah, it was really great.
I think the next part's going to be really tricky for me, because I have put some thought into this pre-recording, and I can't figure out where I want to rank this album.
To be honest, I thought you'd have a very, like, certain place in the rankings, but obviously not.
I think on first listen, I was very much like, okay, number one, easy. But then, I don't know, it does get a bit slow in places. And I don't know if that, in the long run, is going to rub me the wrong way.
I kind of feel not the opposite, but for me, it didn't get too slow in places. I think it was paced well. I do think maybe I wanted more songs to invigorate me more, to have more energy. But at the same time, I know if I listen to this more, I'm going to absolutely love it. And I can see it being like easy number one. But right now, I'm not thinking number one. I'm thinking number two or number three.
Interesting. I think in a way, though, this is kind of the most unique album we've done so far this year. I think maybe with the exception of Glass Beach, but then I think that kind of gets into the interesting ideas, imperfect execution, whereas I think this is a lot stronger.
Yep.
Because this is, I mean, obviously it's drawing from the past, and that's MGMT, do you like their kind of crate diving for influences type deal, but I feel like it's just taking from so many different places, and in a way, so many very uncool places, and making something really good out of it. Like, I would not have chosen to listen to a record of power ballads and Britpop influenced songs for sure. So much. I mean, Britpop's kind of coming back into fashion, but power ballads, I really don't think are gonna be coming back to the mainstream anytime soon. But I don't know, maybe this is kind of prophetic. It does feel like the kind of album that we might, you know, a while, like 5 or so years from now, look back and think, oh, this kind of sowed the seeds for people to do songs like this in the mainstream, but obviously not with the weirdness and probably not with the skill that MGMT are doing it here, if you know what I mean.
This album does feel like it has a part two. Like, I don't know what it is, but it feels like, I mean, it's a full album, and it's like, it's got a start and it's got a finish. But I don't know, with MGMT, they feel like they've always got more to give. Like the ideas are just flowing out of the song, you know? So yeah, I'd love to hear more as well.
my big prediction is that it's going to be like 6 years and then they're going to release something completely different.
I mean, if we're going by patterns, then yes.
Yeah. Maybe you get an in the afternoon style one-off something in this same vein. But I don't know that I'll stick with it.
They just kind of shadow drop like another track to this album, like in a year. No one's going to notice. Mm.
Pull a Kanye and just yeah. remix it once it's already out. I don't know. I might. I mean, obviously, I guess if you want to put it number two or number three, it doesn't hugely matter. But I think I might put it at number one. I think it's so hard because I'm not decided on it yet. But I do really enjoy this album. And it does something different and weird. And I kind of just love it for that.
Mm. Only if we had a third person. Yeah, I think I'm definitely leaning more on two than three. I don't know. I'm happy to have it at number one.
if you're leaning to two or three, we can put it at number two, and then that'll be that.
That'll be that. All right. Yeah, let's do that then.
I just have a feeling that by the end of the year, I'm either going to think, wow, we massively underrated that, or wow, we massively overrated that. But I don't know which way it's going to go yet.
I don't think we're going to say we're overrated this one. Unless something like that.
You think?
No. I think it's executed well. They know what they're doing, like musically. Like, they have a lot of talent, and you can just tell. And it's not going to be overrated. I mean, yeah, we might think it should be at number one, but hey ho.
Anyway, let's get on to upcoming releases this week. Not much coming out this week. It's a bit of a dry one. The Jesus and Mary Chain, though, are releasing a new record. It's their first in many, many years, I think. It's called Glasgow Eyes. I'm intrigued. I've never been a huge fan of theirs or got into their music all that much, despite having listened to a few albums. They are an interesting band and a kind of important band in terms of the history of British rock music and kind of shoegaze, I guess, as being kind of a foundational artist for what that style went on to be. The other album I found coming out this week that you might be interested in, More Mother, is releasing a new record called The Great Bailout. So if you're looking for a good rap album, have we reviewed More Mother before? Yeah, we did, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we did.
We really enjoyed that record, so hopefully this one is good too. But that's it for upcoming releases. Not much else out this week. That's it for the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you, James, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
If you like the show, new episodes come out every Monday. If you're likely to forget, make sure you subscribe and turn on notifications in your podcast app of choice. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us an email at unmutedunmastered@gmail.com. I can now announce that the album for next week is Third Wind by Gulfer.